Because, you know, we weren't getting rid of the learning. The learning just took center stage. What we were trying to do is to get rid of what gets in the way of learning.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard.
Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. Joining us today is Andrea Vasilius, innovative teacher at Olentangy Orange High School in Ohio. So, Andrea, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I am super excited about this conversation. I found Andrea through a mutual colleague who has nothing but adoration and deep respect for the work that she has been doing in the Orange School District. And so let's set a little bit of context then for our listeners as we get started. With 24 years of experience in the field of education, empowering others to accomplish more than they thought that they could is Andrea's passion. We need that so much in teachers, so we're grateful to Andrea for that. Working with students and colleagues to help them solve today's problems through innovative practices has been some of the highlights of her educational journey. And over the course of this 24-year career, she became increasingly frustrated with the rising stress levels she was seeing in her students and herself. And so with several years, she took it upon herself to study ways to create and foster a culture of learning in organizations and classrooms. Andrea supports students to take risks, to foster their creative ideas, to become more resilient and tenacious, and to build the skills they need to have the courage to tackle problems bigger than their own classrooms. So, Andrea, wow, is all I have to say, right? Because that is exactly what we should be doing with high school kids. But I know that it's not always easy to say enough is enough and I'm going to do something different. So talk to us a little bit about your big why, a tangible example about you making the decision, I'm going to change everything that I do in my own classroom. I'm going to change the way I think about education. Give us a little bit of context for what's going on here.
Yeah. One of the first memories that comes to mind in teaching, when I knew that I needed to try something different, I was teaching at West High School in Columbus City Schools at the beginning of my career. And that was back when I believed in homework. And the kids weren't doing homework. And I didn't know why. And finally, they were so sweet. I had this group of ninth graders that year, and I think they were just so kind and funny. And they sat me down, and they were like, "Miss Dodge," that was my maiden name, Miss Dodge. Let's talk about this." And they were just really direct and really transparent. And they said, "We won't do your homework because it's not foldable." And I said, "What?" I said, "What do you mean it's not foldable?" And they said, "Your homework comes out of a book and we're not carrying books home. That's not going to work for us." And I said, "Well, why is it not going to work?" And they're like, "You can't run if you have a backpack full of books on your back." And I said, "What do you mean?" And they're like, "Well, if we get jumped, we have to be able to run." And I had this moment where I was like, these kids have to think I'm an idiot because I haven't asked the right questions to understand the context within they live.
Yeah.
And I will never forget that. And they were kind of like just patting me on the head, like, oh, lady. And I was just like, what am I doing? So I said, okay. I said, that's an easy fix. We can make homework foldable. And they're like, okay. They were so darn cute because they were like, "And we want stickers."
Ninth graders wanting stickers.
That's what I said. I was like, "You want what?" And they were like, "We want stickers. If you make it foldable and you give us stickers for doing our homework, and we want gold stars." And so we worked out that. I was like, "Fine, we'll foldable stickers. We can do that. That's not a problem." But and so we did. And it wasn't perfect. It wasn't a perfect system by any means. But I realized at that time that I needed to listen better.
Yeah,
I needed to listen to what students need. I need to listen to where they are. I need to listen to what they want. And I need to keep going back and checking in constantly. And that was like in my first year of teaching. And it was just this big aha moment that I can't, as a teacher, do what I think is right. That's not going to work. I have to work in partnership with my students.
You know, I love several things about that story, right? So I love the fact that you recognized that you needed to ask different questions. That's super awesome, right? But I also love that you recognized that if you could work with your kids, those students in that moment, to understand their experiences, their backgrounds, their needs, their culture, and for you to recognize that you weren't getting it. That's pretty powerful. And a lot of adults, right, because we assume that we know best, we're not willing to go there. And so I can't say bravo enough that you were willing to own that space with those kids. That's pretty powerful and changed the practice. But I also love that you started with back when I believed in homework. Can we revisit that? Because I wanted to just like cheer, you know, clapping sounds on the recording because yes, homework, no. So all right, break that down for us. Tell us about that piece of belief, and then we're going to move on to some other things. But I think that's so powerful. I advocate for it all the time. Stop, stop, stop giving kids homework for the sake of homework.
Right. I agree. I just think that I'll go back to what you just said. Giving kids homework because it's what we've always done is not a purpose for homework. You know, kids have lives outside of school, and I've really tried to push myself to think in terms of I have 45 minutes or, you know, 50 minutes, 45 minutes with them. What am I doing to add value to that time for them? What experiences are we creating together in a classroom? And if I have to give something outside of that, then what am I doing with the time that we just spent together? And so I've really tried to push myself to rethink and upend my practices to make that time as valuable as we possibly can. And I don't get it right all the time. But again, I go back to that listening to students and what do they need? What do they not need? Checking in with them constantly. Just at the end of the year, I got feedback from students that I know I need to change things, some things for next year. And so that feedback is always incredibly valuable. And helpful with practice. But I just see with my own kids, my own daughters, who are currently, one will be in sixth grade and the other is in eighth grade. You know, we want to do things other than have them sit and do hours and hours and hours of homework. And I get it. You know, our high school students, they're so busy and they need to get out and experience the world.
They do.
They need to have experiences outside of those four walls in the classroom. And I want to make sure that I'm not taking that time from them. It's a complex thing though, right? Because not everything can be accomplished inside the classroom. Reading, a lot of kids, if they're revising a piece of writing, they don't want to do it in school. They want to have their own space, wherever that space is, that they feel comfortable, where they can really get in the writing zone and the workflow and not be interrupted. So all that I understand, but it's a process, I think, to get there over time.
It is. And I think that one of the things that I love and appreciate about that is the recognition that school is not life. It's a moment, right? It's an opportunity to provide some rich and powerful experience that hopefully then guides that young person into life, right? And so stepping back from what we believe, and just because we've always done it that way, and this is the way it was originally designed, does not mean that in 2024, that is what we should be doing, or that is what kids, their families, their communities, educators actually need this experience to be any longer. And so I really, really love that you are thinking and are so mindful about that and that you've created a true partnership with your students, right? I love that too, that you're co-designing with them. So that brings me to sort of the experiment that you went on around becoming gradeless. I want to talk about that a little bit because, again, I love that. I'm an advocate for mastery and giving kids the opportunity to just learn because they can learn and that they get there and they can apply what they know. And this idea that we are grading for the sake of grading, again, it's like homework for the sake of homework. Really, what are we doing? So talk to us about this journey to gradelessness.
Yeah, it's definitely a journey, I would say, that I've learned to understand things in different ways. So I think in Olentangy, specifically in Orange, we opened many years ago. And around 2013-14, we started to swell. Olentangy's district that we are growing district, very fast growing district. And we started to swell, which means we had more students in our classes because we were waiting to open another high school. And I started to feel the stress of that. And sitting on a lot of students, a lot of grading at the time, giving lots of feedback. And I had two small kids at home and felt like I couldn't manage my own workload. And at the same time, I was seeing kids come in just as stressed. I taught seniors at the time, and I was seeing these seniors come in believing that they had to jump through all of these hoops to get into college. And watching them break down and watching their stress levels just be incredibly high, and it wasn't good. At the time, I was working with a colleague in Ohio State's Argumentative Writing Project, and so my husband was hearing us have lots of conversations, my colleague and myself. And he said, I think what we're doing where I work has something to do with what you are trying to do. And he was in IT leadership at a large local company here at the time. And I went down and I visited them and looked at the systems and the processes that they had in place. And at the time, everything was visual. They were using visual management systems. And I got to talk to his boss and his colleagues. And they taught me a lot about lean thinking. They taught me a lot about agile. They taught me about Kanban boards. And I can remember having a conversation with my husband's boss at the time, who is now a really good friend. And I was looking at their visual boards where they would have their stand-ups in the morning. And on the board, she had every team member's priorities, and they would write their priorities for the week. And on there, one of the teammates wrote, get my car fixed. And I said to his boss at the time, why is getting her car fixed on the board? That doesn't have anything to do with what you're doing here. And she looked at me point blank and she said, it has everything to do with what we're doing here, because that's her stress level. And if that's not fixed and I don't help her make sure she gets that fixed, she's not going to be here with us. She's not going to be present. And I was like, duh.
That was profound, right?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. And so I was like, what are we doing? And so I was like, okay, how can I bring this idea into the classroom? And I started to look at how do I change my practices? How do I change my priorities? How do I shift things? How do I change how we communicate in a classroom? And I read and read and read and read as much as I possibly could about culture and culture in different organizations and in education and so forth. And started to bring visual management systems into the classroom and started to do thinking routines from Project Zero and looking at visual learning. We started to just experiment with lots of different things. And in the fall of 2019, I had students out in the hallway and they had taken a quiz, a visual quiz, and it was a thinking routine. And I'd posed the question, all these big pieces of their work were up in the hallway and they were looking at them and they were analyzing them. And I asked the question, how do we grade these? And I had started to recognize that grades were in the way, but what was I going to do about it? And I didn't have an answer. So it just so happens that as we were standing in the hallway, the kids started to talk about the work that everybody had done the previous day and the quizzes. And there was one student said, why are we grading this? This is our thinking. And it started, and they started to have this conversation about how do we grade thinking and should thinking be graded and what does it mean to give feedback? And they started to wrestle with these really complex ideas. And I was just listening. And in this conversation, that same student said, why are we solving problems? Why do they keep giving us problems that they already know the answers to? This is dumb. And he got really impassioned, and they were all impassioned at the time. And he said, can we get rid of grades? And they all cheered, right? They're like, they're having this moment. and what was I going to do? Say no? Yeah. And so I said, sure. And I had no idea what that meant. Yeah. None. I had no idea what that meant at the time. And so we started in and we looked at what do we have to do? They had to have quarter grades. They had to have semester grades. They had to have year-end grades, right? Because they were seniors. That's what gets communicated to colleges and so forth. So we looked at our parameters, but what can we do? And I had four sections of seniors at the time, and we just started in. And it was lots of conversations and lots of feedback, and we did it together. It was definitely not something that I was in charge of. It was collaborative between the kids and myself, and I was their communication vehicle between the different sections because I didn't have them all at the same time. And, you know, I had talked to my principal at the time about it and let him know what we were doing. And he said, what if they quit? And I said, what if they do? I said, I don't know that they will. And he said, I don't know that they will either. And he said, but I have faith in you that if you get into this, you can also find your way out of it. But the kids and I did that together, and they did anything but quit. They did not quit. It was some of the most beautiful work I had ever seen, and thoughtful and diligent. And it was an incredible experience. And then COVID happened in March of 2020 and shut that year down. And so with that, I wanted to know why. Why did this happen? Why did they not quit? What was different about this experience for them? And it just so happened that I was in a research project with the Columbus Museum of Art and Harvard's Project Zero at the time. And so one of the professors agreed to speak with me over the summer and work with me a little bit. And she directed me to look at the self-determination theory and look into that. And so I did, and started reading about that. And in conversations with her, I started to figure out, okay, I think there's something here with autonomy and agency. And so that's where I'm at, basically, and have not gone back to the system that I used before. I don't think I could. But again, it has to come from kids, and the kids have to want to be a part of it, because if they don't want to be a part of it, then we have to change what we're doing. They get a lot of feedback. It's a lot of feedback, a lot of conversations, a lot of communication. And they do have quarter grades. They do have semester grades. They do have year-end grades. But how those are formulated very differently based on evidence, based on the work that they've done. They have a lot of autonomy. They have a lot of say in the work that they do. And we try and build that together. It's not always perfect, but we try.
Yeah. I love that so much, Andrea. Oh my goodness. I've got so many ways we could go with this because it just gets me so excited, because making the transition to a student-centered approach, the fact that you're embracing that agency and autonomy and mastery, you didn't necessarily put that sort of labeling on it, but ultimately, you know, your kids are going to get to the end of whatever that journey you set together is, because you gave them the time and the space and the grace to get there and by whatever means, right, was going to be necessary. So I really, really love that piece of it.
Well, and that year, that first year, the kids came in and we wrote a research question and we dug in together, and we've done that ever since, except for one year. And the kids' feedback has been really interesting. And I remember one of my students saying, I know exactly where she was in the classroom when she said it. And she said, so many times we're graded on how fast we learn.
Right.
And there are things that I know that I just can't learn quickly yet, and I need more time. And sometimes in the system with grades, I don't have that time.
Right.
And I was like, oh, we need to, we've got some changes to make here.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
So with that in mind, that's a great segue. I'm super curious. So how... you had a supportive leader at the time when you started that journey. So that's awesome, because we know none of this stuff work happens. It's not sustainable. Leadership matters. But I'm more curious about your colleagues' response to this? And has your work as an individual classroom teacher had an impact on the culture of the place where you are, even if it's small and if it's just getting started? I'm super curious about how your fellow educators are thinking about what's going on, because I'm just guessing here, but I'm betting kids are dying to be in your classroom. Or some might be afraid of it too. I mean, it goes both ways, honestly, right?
I won't make any assumptions there. But I think I'm really fortunate to work with a group of people who are, and it, not just in my building, but across the district, who are constantly looking for ways to support students that are beneficial for students and that are student-centered. So I think at the time, you know, and I always really appreciated my colleagues greatly, because we're very collaborative and can bounce ideas off of each other and say, you know, I think I'm going to try this. What do you think? And sharing ideas. And so I think at the time, other teachers in the district were experimenting with different ways of grading and different ways of looking at grades and going at things differently. So we kind of came together and shared ideas and shared different practices and so forth in our building. Then other teachers started to look at, well, how do I go pointless in a classroom in my particular department? And they're still doing that work. But I think it's important that it doesn't look the same for every teacher.
Yep.
If a teacher wants to go down this path, that there are lots of different ways that you can get involved with it. It's not one way. All students are different. All contexts that teachers work in are different. And, you know, I grew up in a small town. I've worked in Columbus City. Now I work in Olentangy. So, you know, I've experienced different schools and different classrooms and different students with different parents and different communities. So it does look different for every teacher, especially with their level of comfort.
You mentioned parents. So what was the parents' response to all of this? I bet you got some questions.
You know, again, I'm going to say this. We have really great parents, supportive parents. And I think what I've learned that if you're open and you take those questions and you're transparent, and the kids are happy and the kids are learning. Because, you know, we weren't getting rid of the learning. The learning just took center stage. What we were trying to do is to get rid of what gets in the way of learning.
Awesome.
The stress, the fear, those things that get in the way, the barriers. And so the kids didn't learn any less.
They probably learned more, actually.
I would love to think that they did.
I have no doubt. No, just knowing high school kids the way I do and the way what happens when you can allow them to be unfettered, my guess is they learned so much more in the time they had with you. Every time I've had the opportunity to spend time with educators that have made this particular shift or the students who've been the beneficiaries of it, I can tell you that what they tell me is, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And I was able to run down this road and I was really curious about X, Y, or Z. And nobody said, oh, nope, we don't have time for that. That makes you a pretty powerful teacher.
I have great students and I try and really work collaboratively with them. So none of this work can be done without their input, without their willingness, without their ideas, right? Because I don't want to teach them what to think. I want to teach them how to think and that they have these different tools so that when they go out in the world, that they can solve these bigger problems, that they have the courage, that they have, the tenacity, the resilience, like you said in the beginning, to solve these bigger problems or do whatever they choose to do. And hopefully the little bit of time that I get to spend with them can act as a stepping stone to encourage them to go on and do great things in the world. So,
you know, I always think about the fact that folks are listening to this program, are coming from all over the world, all kinds of circumstances, different environments, different districts, you name it. And they've been listening to us have this conversation like, oh my gosh, I want my classroom to look and feel like Andrea's classroom. But I don't know how to get started with that. So can you provide a little wisdom or insight for folks that are like, okay, I want to do this. I'm ready. What would you say to somebody who's like, I'm ready, but I don't know what to do?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I talk to teachers about this, I would say just start small. Start with one teeny tiny thing you want to work on. I know I do that each year. I pick one little thing that I would like to get better at and then just play with it. And so you just try things and you tell kids and you're honest. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've said to students, I have no idea what I'm doing. And they laugh at me and I'm like, we'll do this together. Because I think one of the things is I don't assume the role. I try and really not assume the role that I know everything. And I try and assume the coach role. And when you share power in a classroom, I don't have power over, I have power with, hopefully. So then when that occurs, you know, things start to shift. And so when I'm talking to teachers, and for some teachers, you know, it has to start to be that shift of power. That might be one area. You know, how can we give kids a little bit more autonomy? How can we give kids a little bit more say? It may be something small that they find, you know, that they want to change a system or a process they have in place. It may be just something tiny, but just to start with one thing and not all the things, I think is really important because it's a journey. It's not something that I learned how to do overnight. It's something that I continue to hopefully improve upon every year that I teach that I'm honored to be in the classroom for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have no doubt that's exactly what's happening.
And I would say too, that if teachers are going to do this work, also a great thing to have is administration that is supportive. Principals and assistant principals that support the work because, well, students need to be in environments where they can learn and they can take risks and feel that, you know, their grades are not going to be hurt because they take a risk or they mess up or they have to start over or whatever. Teachers need that same supportive environment. And that, I think that's really, really important. The cultures that we want to create with our students are the same cultures that our teachers deserve as well.
Absolutely. And well said, because there's no doubt whatsoever that we need that whole ecosystem has to be flowing and functioning as it needs to. Otherwise, it will break down. We know that. It won't be sustained. It will break down. People will get frustrated. And when we get frustrated, we go back to what we know or how we were trained, right? And then the wheels come off this incredible bus that you have built. So, you know, Andrea, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat with us, to share your story and your journey. And I have no doubt that we are going to chat again because I have so many more questions for you. So I really appreciate you taking time today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and being here with you today too.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.